This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. It's Reporters Roundtable Thursday, which means we check in with reporters to find out the stories that they have put in print and online out there. And right now we're talking with Carrie Napoleon with the Post Tribune about her two stories of a very interesting note from the city of Gary. And Carrie, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. One of the big stories that you've had out there to take a look at is a longstanding problem in the city of Gary, and the new administration taking over at the first of the year is really cracking down on illegal dumping. And they've actually set up an entire team of city employees to work on it. Tell us about the story. Did you have a chance to run out on some of these locations to check them out?
Yes, I sure did, actually. We kind of did a follow-along with the code enforcement team last week and went to some of the hot spots and just kind of saw what they were doing on a day-to-day basis to try and get this under control. Obviously, it's a long-standing problem. Previous administrations have tried to address it. They're just trying to take a slightly different approach and be a little more aggressive with the enforcement and tracking down who's actually doing some of this dumping.
Mm-hmm. Are you finding in going with the team members and checking out some of these locations that they have pointed out, have gotten word of or gotten tips on, that they seem to have found a way, maybe that, like you say, it may be actually winning the battle, so to speak?
Well, I've got to say, I was pretty impressed with the way that they were kind of looking at what was being dumped to find clues on where it came from, and then kind of like detectives, backtracing and going and, you know, sometimes people hire a firm to clean out a garage or clean out a home, and the company says, well, hey, I'm going to take it to the dump, but then they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And they take all that material and go dump it somewhere in the city because it's a big, you know, 57 square miles. It's a big place. There's a lot of places that things can hide. So, you know, that has been kind of the problem. So now they're going to the people who have hired these individuals and saying, hey, tell me who you hired or you're going to get the fine.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully the word's getting out. They're saying that it is getting a little bit better, the code enforcement guy said.
What are some of the places that you had a chance to go visit with the team to check out that they mentioned there have been some of these rather secret dumping locations around the city of Gary?
Well, one of the spots was a frontage road or an access road, I should say, to the highway. And, you know, it's not really out in an open place. It's very secluded with trees, and it's clear that the tires there have been dumped there for years and mm-hmm. years and years. I mean, some of the tires actually had entire trees growing through the center hole. So, you know, this is a place that they've used for a long time. The city's not even sure who the land belongs to. That's something that they're kind of looking into right now as to whether this is county, is it state, you know, who's kind of responsible for this as they figure out a cleanup plan to get those tires out of there.
I understand that they had a chance to get some of these calls checked out in some locations in particular, and you even got some calls in, I guess, to the city about some dumping that was in progress. Did they actually catch anybody in the act or come close to it?
Actually, they've been pretty good at that so far this year. On several occasions, they have caught people in the act, thanks in part to people calling right away, either the mayor or, you know, code enforcement itself. When we were with them, they got a phone call. So we shot out over to the site, but it turned out to be a false alarm. But somebody had said, hey, I see a truck with a lot of tires. I'm afraid they're going to dump them. So, you know, code enforcement went out to check it out.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that residents in the neighborhoods, they're not happy with the illegal dumping. Many of the residents I know in Gary have certain pride in their neighborhoods, even though it has problems with abandoned buildings and the like, and now this illegal dumping situation. Have any of these people at least gotten word back to you about some of the actions of these cleanup teams been doing?
You know, I haven't really talked to any or spoken to any of the residents regarding their reaction to this, mm-hmm. only to see some of the comments on Facebook, I mean, when they're successful in busting somebody, they always post it to their Facebook page, the Reimagine Gary page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the comments on there are generally pretty positive. And there's often also more suggestions of, hey, you need to look here on there. So it takes the whole community. Everybody's going to have to pitch in to get this under control. The city is also trying to partner with businesses and residents interested in installing cameras, mm-hmm. closed circuit cameras, or cameras that would be able to capture this at, you know, when nobody's looking. So once the site is cleaned up, they're hoping to partner with nearby residents for a small fee to get that camera up, because obviously the city has financial issues and can't afford to place cameras everywhere.
Right. We're talking with Carrie Napoleon, who's a reporter for the Post Tribune, about the stories that she's put out in print and online recently. And another story I know that you've had a chance to work on and get some reaction to is that of the passing of a longtime Gary City Councilman, Roy Pratt. Tell us about Mr. Pratt.
Yes, sir. Interestingly, Mr. Pratt was responsible back in the 90s for creating the Gary Cleanup Committee, which still exists today. It's a mm-hmm. committee of residents who go out on different cleanups throughout the city. So, I mean, this has been an issue that has been around for a very long time. Mr. Pratt served 32 years on the council. He was 8 terms on the council and saw through a lot of changes. He was, I personally did not ever have the opportunity to meet him, but he was very well regarded by the people that I spoke to.
I was going to say, I know one of the people that you had a chance to talk to and certainly had a lot to say about him was Chuck Hughes, who's the president and CEO of the Gary Chamber of Commerce, and had a chance, I guess, to serve with him as a council member too.
Yeah, it was interesting to see the number, because he was on the council for so long, interesting to see the number of people that he served with that it didn't really realize or register with me. It's like, oh, he was on the council at the same time this fellow was on the council. Mm-hmm. Chuck and him go way back, and he did have a lot of interesting things to say, especially about his start and how he got into education and, you know, being an athlete and a star athlete, and that's how so many people, you know him. Besides being a councilman, he was just a well-beloved coach in the city.
I understand he was a great mentor to a lot of people who had served on council, and even some folks, members, I mean, his own staff had a chance to speak out about him. Tell us about what some of the staff members had to say.
Yes, the current council office manager, Vanessa Williams, worked for him for 28 years. She said that he was definitely the best boss that she has ever had. Mm-hmm. She really had high praise of just how helpful he was and what a good demeanor and personality. People described him over and over as larger than life presence and just a very jovial kind of person. He loved telling jokes. He loved having a good time, but he was also very serious and dedicated to the city.
Now, can you fill us in on some of the particulars about the visitation and the services that are planned for Mr. Pratt?
The visitation takes place on Friday from noon to 8 p.m., and that's going to be at the Genesis Convention Center. Mm-hmm. Kappa Alpha Psi sorority is going to have their fraternity is going to have their ceremony from at 4 p.m. that evening. And then on Saturday, the funeral services will take place at 11 a.m. at St. John the Baptist Church at 2457 Massachusetts Street in Gary. And visitation Saturday is an hour prior to the service. And he will be interred at Evergreen Memorial Park in Hobart.
As for the passing of a former councilman, a longtime politician in Gary, Roy Pratt, and Carrie Napoleon is the reporter from the Post Tribune that wrote the story about him and about the people that knew him as well. And we thank you very much for spending time with us to talk about your stories today.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
There are new numbers out this week that bring into sharper focus just how much damage the pandemic's inflicted on the hospitality industry. 41% of Indiana restaurant owners say they are in financial trouble and they probably won't make it through the winter. And that's not the only alarming news to come out of the COVID-19 Restaurant Impact Data Report from the National Restaurant Association. Inside Indiana business host Gary Dick talked with Indiana Restaurant and Lodging Association President and CEO Patrick Tam, and they offer some perspective on what may be in store for an industry that puts nearly $13 billion into the Hoosier economy.
Well, the COVID-19 pandemic forced restaurants to close, shift from dine-in to carry-out, and reduce staff, reduce hours as well. The impact is far-reaching for an industry that employs more than 300,000 Hoosiers. Now, this week, the National Restaurant Association released some Indiana-specific results of a COVID-19 restaurant survey, and the numbers are staggering. Indiana Restaurant and Lodging Association CEO Patrick Tam is here now to break down the results and also look at what might be next for the industry. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Gary, for having us.
Let's get right to these numbers. They are amazing. About one-third of those surveyed here in Indiana say business conditions worse in August than in July. And again, 41% say they don't know if they'll be in business 6 months from now if things don't change. Did these numbers surprise you at all?
No, actually, these numbers, we've been forecasting the next 6 months as being harder than the last 6 months. There was really no surprise because we talked to our owners and are pretty in tune in terms of what they're facing on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And it's very challenging, not just for owners, but more importantly and most importantly, the hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers that we used to employ.
Yeah. Some news late in the week, Governor Holcomb announcing that the state will go to level five statewide, essentially relaxing the restrictions that were in place. That will not be the case, though. Marion County, Indianapolis will not participate in that. Your reaction to that?
No, we were very thankful for Governor Holcomb's movement to stage five. Realized, though, with social distancing, we're not truly going to be at 100%. So we still have some significant restrictions. We understand that. But you know what the governor said, though, which I want to make sure Hoosiers understood and heard him loud and clear, that businesses that practice the proper sanitation, disinfection, all those practices that we were required to do via state law, federal regulation as well, restaurants that are doing that, taking the Hoosier Hospitality Promise, which they can do, and also is supported with the state through the Indiana Destination Development Corporation, and the governor administration, but that people will vote with their feet on restaurants and all businesses that are taking proper protocol seriously.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier a group of about a dozen, 15 mm-hmm. restaurants, bars, nightclubs filed a suit in an attempt to challenge essentially these restrictions. Do you think that, how do you think that'll play out?
Well, we're not involved in that mm-hmm. Process or that lawsuit, but you know, our industry's been the hardest hit. And people are trying to find ways to debt service. People are trying to find ways to keep people employed. And also not face complete financial ruin. The hospitality industry is the industry of opportunity. We represent 8 out of 10 of our owners started out entry level. Hmm. Women owners, minority owners, leaders, decision makers lead any industry in America. We represent truly an opportunity to actually achieve the American dream. Yeah. And that's the challenge where those businesses are not the typical business financed. They're financed off credit cards, personal loans. Their homes are mortgaged into their businesses. So this, when a business fails in the hospitality industry, it oftentimes means complete and utter financial ruin.
Yeah, I know you are on record as saying there needs to be some stimulus, some support from the federal government. I know there's a lot of talk of things on Capitol Hill right now. What do you think needs to happen, and do you think it's actually going to happen in an era when bipartisanship is really at a minimum?
It is at a minimum. Unfortunately, we've had 6 months of government-ordered shutdowns in a global pandemic, which we understand. But we've only received 8 weeks of relief. Mm-hmm. Senator Young, which I'm proud that he's from the state of Indiana, actually has a bipartisanship piece of legislation called the Restart Act with a leading Democrat, Senator Bennett from Colorado. That is the true approach and the best approach for America, for Hoosiers. And we should be very thankful that a lot of those elements now are being talked about in a larger package. But Senator Young and Senator Bennett cooperatively in a bipartisan fashion, already have over 54-plus signatures of other senators on that piece of legislation.
Okay, very quickly, Patrick, we're out of time, but quickly, you and I talked earlier, and you're seeing some positive activity in some of the suburban areas around the state.
Yeah, we actually see quite a bit of activity, whether that's at the Yard and Fishers, whether that's in Goshen, Newburgh, Indiana, outside of Evansville. Central business districts are very, very hit hard, not just in downtown Indianapolis, but also Fort Wayne, Evansville, South Bend, and other places, because all the cultural amenities, attractions, and so forth, and offices are not being utilized as they have in the past. Would encourage people to try to get back to their offices just for a couple days a week. Reintroduce yourself to your dry cleaner as well as your local restaurant.
Yep. Big story, big impact as well. Patrick Tam, the president and CEO of the Indiana Restaurant and Lodging Association, as always, thanks for joining us. We'll be in touch.
Hey, thank you.
And that is Inside Indiana business host Gary Dick talking with Patrick Tam, who's the president and CEO of the Indiana Restaurant and Lodging Association. There's a brighter than usual spotlight on the race for Indiana Attorney General this year, mostly because of a person who is not in the race, the current AG, Curtis Hill. Hill's sexual misconduct while in office led to Republicans choosing a new person to face off against Democrat Jonathan Weinzapfel. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith talks with both of the candidates, first with the Republican Party candidate, Todd Rokita, about the big issues in the race and how he would approach the job differently than the current occupant.
How would you run the office differently in the next 4 years than it has the last 4 years?
Well, I would hope that there wouldn't be a distraction, right? And you can't deny the fact that, you know, there's obviously a lot of distraction in the office when the head of your office is under such a cloud. And then, like I did when I was Secretary of State, I have a culture in the office that allows people to serve with servants' hearts, being good counsel to the General Assembly, good counsel to the governor, and protecting the people of Indiana when it comes to their consumer decisions and how they're interacted with businesses around the state.
Indiana's currently involved with, led by Curtis Hill, a lawsuit that seeks to strike down the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Would you want to continue Indiana's involvement in that lawsuit, and why would that be a good thing for the country and for the state?
I would keep us in that lawsuit to make sure our points as a state were being made. I believe, and it's been proven now with nearly a decade of Obamacare under our belts, that the promises haven't been kept. Consider the Healthy Indiana Plan. Now, that predated Obamacare. We created this program to make sure that those that found themselves in a gap.
But isn't the expansion of the Healthy Indiana Plan funded by the Affordable Care Act?
Correct. That's correct. But that doesn't mean the funding has to go away, just the bad policies.
Inherent in the Affordable Care Act are protections for those with pre-existing conditions, the lifetime caps. How do you say, well, I like that, but I'm also fighting to get rid of this law?
Right. So to be clear, I am for covering people with pre-existing conditions. And although the Attorney General's office isn't a lawmaking office, I'm not of the legislature, but I would be for and would help the General Assembly make sure that pre-existing conditions were covered.
The issue that's seemingly taken over all of our lives the last several months, COVID-19, how does the Attorney General's office and how would it under your leadership intersect in addressing the pandemic?
Several different ways, and it's one of the main reasons I'm running. A lot of scam artists will be coming out. A lot of fraud will be out there. I'm the only one in this race that has a record of defending Indiana voters and taxpayers against fraudulent activity. When I was Secretary of State, we got 300 years of jail time for white-collar criminals. Also, we need to make this economy grow as quickly as we can. So what does the Attorney General have to do with economic development? Well, a lot. By virtue of protecting first against federal government regulatory overreach. And then even if our state agencies got out of hand in terms of stopping the economy from coming back and growing.
What role would you foresee playing in the debate around police reform, and what police reform do you think is needed in Indiana?
Yeah. The first question we have to ask is what's being taught right now? Oh, reform this and reform that and no, don't do this anymore, but do this all the time. That's just a political decision that's being made because of a crisis at hand. What we really ought to do, if we want good policing, is first of all, listen to our police officers, find out what they're being taught right now. Once we understand that as leaders in a community, then we can decide, okay, together, with input from all stakeholders, neighborhood associations, community groups, the police officers, of course, themselves and their leadership.
I think a lot of Hoosiers don't know exactly what the Attorney General does. What is the most important duty of that office in your mind?
Look, at the end of the day, we have got to protect people. That's what government is for. And protect people has several different meanings. It's protecting them from consumer fraud and things like that that the Attorney General does. But it also means protecting their liberty. It also means protecting their rights.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Brendan Smith then spoke with the Democratic Party candidate for Attorney General, Jonathan Weinzaffel, and asked of him the same questions.
As you step into the office of Attorney General, if you win this race, what do you do differently? What is your priority in terms of changing how that office is run?
Well, I had the opportunity to talk to some former deputy attorney generals. You know, what they have told me is that, you know, his ethical issues have been a huge distraction. His real focus on some partisan national issues has been a real distraction. There really hasn't been a focus on Indiana. And I think what I would offer is something completely different. I'm not interested in getting Indiana involved in national lawsuits. I'm not interested in playing the D.C. political games. I'm only going to get involved if it has a direct impact on Hoosiers.
The lawsuit that Indiana, led by Curtis Hill, is involved in, trying to permanently strike down across the board the Affordable Care Act. What do you see as the future of health care as it relates to how you would lead Indiana as Attorney General?
First and foremost, I mean, we'll pull Indiana out of that lawsuit on day one. I think symbolically it's important to stand up and say this is not good policy. This is simply just about someone's partisan political agenda. Killing the ACA would have a profound impact on Hoosiers. We're talking about 2.7 million who have some type of pre-existing condition, right? Whether that's high blood pressure, diabetes, a positive test for coronavirus. That means you, if Todd Rokita and Curtis Hill are successful, that means these individuals are going to have a very difficult time finding insurance in the future, or they're going to have to pay exorbitant rates. In addition, you have 550,000 Hoosiers who have received health care through the expansion of the Healthy Indiana Plan, which was enabled under the Affordable Care Act. These are folks that are going to immediately lose their insurance right in the middle of a global pandemic. This makes zero sense, and frankly, I find it unconscionable.
There's perhaps nothing that has dominated headlines over this year, obviously, more than COVID-19. What would you do as Attorney General to confront this pandemic?
Probably one of the more important things that has transpired over this last several months is the governor's public statewide mask order, right? Curtis Hill issued an advisory opinion basically saying he doesn't have the legal authority to do that. My opponent, Todd Rokita, says, well, we all just have the legislature deal with it. And, you know, frankly, I'm the only one who stood up and actually supported the Republican governor because, frankly, we have to get this virus under control. You know, the Consumer Protection Division, I think, would be incredibly important as we're protecting seniors from fraud and abuse. Also, the Medicaid Fraud Division, making sure we're holding nursing homes accountable.
How do you see your role in the discussion around police reform, and what would you push for?
You know, we have to give law enforcement the utmost respect. And frankly, they need to be involved in these discussions. But with that, I think we ought to start with what the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus has put on the table. I think there are some good ideas there. I think several things we ought to be doing is requiring police officers throughout the state to wear body cams.
I think a lot of people don't know or misunderstand what the Office of the Attorney General does. What do you see as the most important duty of the Attorney General?
Basically, it is to be the people's attorney, but it means representing the people. And especially in this case with coronavirus, making sure we're protecting them, protecting their health care, protecting their wages, trying to create a better future for them. There are a lot of people who say, well, let's get back to normal. Well, there's no going back to life has changed dramatically. And what this creates is an opportunity for us to really shape our future, right? And I'd like to be a part of those discussions and leading Indiana to a place where there's greater opportunity and that you know, we have a more just and fair system for everybody.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Bock says Indiana's latest COVID-19 numbers are concerning, but the governor's ongoing position is that it's the responsibility of all 6.7 million Hoosiers to help mitigate the spread of the virus. Indiana's rate of positive cases versus the people tested has increased significantly in the last couple weeks. Hospitalizations for COVID are at their highest level in 4 months, but Dr. Bock says much of the state is still in a low-risk position. So she says that the state is focused on talking with local governments and health departments where the spread of the virus is getting worse.
Work individually with those particular counties or districts to make sure that we address with them those options available to them.
Governor Holcomb didn't take any questions from the media during Wednesday's COVID-19 update like he has in the last 7 months. But earlier in the day, in an unrelated event, Holcomb said that the state is in a much different place than at the start of the pandemic. And he emphasized the need for people to be responsible.
Not just the government or an individual business. That means every 6.7 million Hoosiers that are all part of this and contribute to positivity rates, et cetera.
Dr. Chris Bock says people need to continually to social distance and to wear masks when they're out in public. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. I'm Chris Nolte. Our thanks to our guests on the program, and thank you for joining us. We'll be back with you on Monday.